Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Mike Lupica, MLB.com, and the New York Daily News.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I am Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and we heartily welcome you to the Monday morning edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We go at it every Monday and Thursday, a reincarnation of our longtime TV gig. Three of us have been together a long time. And gentlemen, the manna from heaven for those of people who are still talking about sports, people such as us, continues on. And last night, we had episodes 5 and 6 of the Last Dance. And
I hope it's five and six out of 20 or 30, Bob.
Oh, by the way, I'm going to throw this one. I don't know if you guys know this.
In a couple of weeks.
I don't know if you guys know this, but the Globe had an interview with the Justin, Mr. Hare, the producer, and he's a director.
Director, excuse me.
This thing is still not finished. He said that they, because of the bump up, remember it was supposed to be originally going on in June during the finals or after, they rushed it into service. We're very happy to say, but the episodes 9 and 10 aren't done yet, or at least as of last week. Just so you know.
And what do you think? When are we going to hear
all the funding they need at this point?
Well, I'm just saying. It's just interesting that I just thought that's a footnote. So the big dominant thing last night, it's the gambling, right? It's the gambling. We finally tackled the gambling. And Michael had a terrific explanation of himself. I don't have a gambling problem. I have a competition problem. I have a competitive problem. Yeah. But I don't have a gambling problem. Yeah, the floor is yours, gentlemen.
Well, for people who are listening to us who are younger and, you know, only kind of learning about Michael Jordan now through this thing and basically are being indoctrinated that he was God. In fact, he even referred to himself as such yesterday in one of the episodes.
Yes, he did. This
was a even bigger element to Michael Jordan than I think the series suggested. The series suggested that there was, he went to Las Vegas one time during the playoffs, and therein that was the problem. There was talk about Michael betting on things and laying down enormous amounts of money on everything for years, and so the talk about him having a gambling problem wasn't based on that one incident. It maybe was brought to the spotlight by that one incident. But I agree with you, Bob. He had the money to spare. Michael Jordan clearly hasn't become destitute. He didn't gamble away his savings. Like he said at one point, I'd be hocking my rings if I really had a problem. But that doesn't mean that he didn't go over the line, and turn everything into a gambling. I mean, if you have enough money, in theory, if you never run out of money, you can be the world's most degenerate gambler and still say, I don't have a gambling problem because I have money. That doesn't necessarily make it so. I think he as witnessed by Mike, the coin toss, which I thought was an amazing piece of footage where he just couldn't let the security guard win. The guy clearly saw everything as an opportunity to, put money on it, not just to compete, but to put money on it.
Yeah, and Mitch and Bob, I think, Mitch, you're right. We'd heard about Michael's gambling, and when you say gambled on everything, but not, I don't think anybody for 5 seconds ever thought that Michael gambled on his sport, in our world, the only people have to believe what they're seeing is real. So that was never an issue with Michael. And yeah, that answer he gave last night about hocking his ring, I love that. I'm paraphrasing a line from Citizen Kane where the guy says to Kane, Mr. Kane, you lost $1 million on that paper, your paper this year. And he said, yes, I did. And he said, I'm probably going to lose $1 million next year. And if that goes on for another 30 years, I'll have to sell this paper. Okay, that's 1930s, 1940s money. So I actually thought he was extremely plausible Yeah, did he play? Did he gamble and golf with guys who were not the deacon of the church choir? Yes, and he admitted that last night. And he did sound a little bit disingenuous, saying, "Well, I found out after." Well, yeah.
Okay. Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm shocked. Shocked to discover. Oh wait, from Casablanca, there's gambling going on in this establishment. But yeah, do I ever think it was a problem? And I think I told you guys before, and I'll bumper sticker this story. I wrote a column after he went to Atlantic City. My column was running that week in the Daily News and in the Chicago Tribune. And I wrote a column saying, shut up. Everybody shut up. Everybody said this year that he's taken his game to another level. And I don't remember one time people saying he wasn't getting enough sleep or he was too distracted at night. And that's the way I felt then. That's the way I feel about all that stuff that we saw last night now.
Yeah. Well, the deeper thing though was the that you I wondered how deeply we'd get into it and the golf course thing, the golf course gambling, the alleged
the Eskenas book was a big deal, they did
give us a flash of that, the alleged welching on bets, and then of course the big one, the topic is the speculation that his father's death had something to do with his gambling debts, situation.
Which I thought was really unfair. Then and now, Bob. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was out there. I mean, I know there was a lot of crap out there,
but yeah. I thought that was really unfair to Michael and to his father.
Yeah, no, to Mr. Jordan. Yes.
Well, the theme that ran through a lot of what we saw last night in both episodes was essentially that he would find any motivation in the world to drive him, whether it was to beat the security guard with a tossing of coins against a wall or to beat Clyde Drexler because somebody dared to say that the two of them were on a similar level, or to take down Tony Kukoc because he felt like we were the children for the Chicago Bulls and he was the desired child. I mean, these kinds of things drove him, and then you end up seeing him sort of burning out. So it was interesting that you had those two things going, and the gambling was just part of that whole thing. He had to make everything a competitive drive, and whether that was finding a player to attack, finding a report to attack, what the media thought of him to attack, or gambling on every hole on a golf course. And you could see, you know, when he had that tee time, he wasn't letting anybody, you know, he was honking the horn.
Oh, that was, wasn't that great, Mitch? What, yeah. Wasn't
I mean,
that
to capture
great?
That stuff is just incredible. Where all this footage has been, because look, I understand the 1997 season, they had permission to follow him around literally everywhere. But the stuff that came from like 92 and 93 and all that, like that bus thing and following, where did they get all that? I mean, where has that stuff been that nobody has seen up till now?
Hey, here's what I was thinking last night. That scene in Barcelona where he's on, and that's something we got to talk about, the great thing with the Reebok logo. That was fantastic. And covering it with the flag, which was inspired. When that, you know, when he's talking about Harvey effing Schiller, where did that come from? I mean, yeah. Mitch, it looked like it was being shot from the seat behind him bus. But when he talked about Harvey Schiller, and then we saw how it was resolved, which you have to admit was pretty brilliant, draping themselves
Although there was a lot of controversy over that, you know, you're not supposed to handle a flag like that. A flag's not supposed to be clothing. And of course, for the purpose that I remember at the time I was there in Barcelona, as I think you guys were.
We were.
And the whole explanation was, well, I'm loyal to the people who've been loyal to me, you know, okay. But you also chose to play on an Olympic team. And, you know, that was Michael just guarding, you know, I know that I'm the show. I'm Mick Jagger and everybody else is the Stones, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And what are you going to do to me? And in the end, what did they do to him? Nothing. Reebok got pissed off, but they didn't do anything to him.
No, he was Michael. One of the things. Now, one of the questions you might get out of this that was misleading is exactly how instrumental he was in winning these games. Michael used Monte Carlo the whole trip as a vacation. And the joking was that Michael, how well Michael played on a given night depended on whether he had played 36 or 54 during the day. And he only occasionally gave us the Michael Jordan show. He left that to Barkley. Barkley was the best player on the team.
And if I'm remembering correctly, didn't they fly in from Monte Carlo or take day trips out there? I don't think that they were staying at the Olympic Village. I think they had a hotel.
Where?
But I remember him and Chuck Daly, even, you know, the coach, went and played golf on off days. They took a private plane and flew out of Spain and went someplace else to. That's how into the Olympics they were. You know, they were like, is this an off day? Good, let's go to the foreign country in a golf course.
They were definitely in a five-star hotel in Barcelona.
I forget which one it was, Bobby.
I don't either. I can picture it. They were clearly there in a hotel there. There was no Olympic. There was no Olympic.
Where Michael did not sleep. And again, I love. I don't know if you stayed to watch Scott Van Pelt with Barkley after the second episode last night. Barkley was laughing and he's talking about the poker games with it was Michael, Scotty, Barkley, and I forget who the fourth one. It doesn't matter. And he said there would be a point every night, Mitch, where Michael would try to buy the pot. He would. Barkley's laughing his ass off. He says, I don't have the kind of money. Scotty didn't have the money. But there would be a point where he would say, okay, I'll buy the pot. All right. So we've talked about the gambling. The gambling is the lead from last night, and it's where we should have started today. But there's a secondary lead to this story, and it speaks to bigger issues about Michael and the problems that some people had with Michael. And it was an off-the-hand comment, and I thought his explanation was really good last night about, you know, getting involved in a Senate race in North Carolina, Republicans buy sneakers too. And that line, man, I'll tell you something, that line stuck to him. Okay. And by the way, I saw a story today from Sean Gregory in TimeMagazine.com where Harvey Gantt all this time later says, I don't think Michael's endorsement would have helped me win the election anyway against Jesse Helms. But that the idea that he was obligated to be an activist, this comes up all the time in sports, but principally with him because he is the GOAT. And, you know, you've heard me say this. I think he's the most compelling athlete since Ali. Okay. And that whole issue has never really left Michael Jordan.
Do you think, Michael, I'm throwing this out there. I've never once given this a thought. This is total speculation. You can say right away, Bob, don't even go there. But I'm going to go there. Do you think that if he were confronted with the issue in 1968, that he would have boycotted the Olympics?
Would he have boycotted the Olympics? No, but I'll let me turn it around, Bob. Do you think he would have not stepped forward to make himself available to the draft the way Ali did?
I think he would have done the expedient thing for him in both cases,
I think he always did the expedient thing for him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, again, people who were watching this for the first time or don't know a lot about Michael Jordan, it wasn't just that he didn't want to get involved in that Senate race, which I don't have any problem with. I mean, I don't think anyone should be coerced to support somebody, whether they are of the same skin color or of the same religion or of any other like kind thing, simply because of that. He said, I don't know the guy. I don't want to get involved in something. I don't even know who the guy is. He made a contribution to his campaign at his mother's urging. But he didn't want to get involved. And if he had left it at that and not made the comment, Republicans buy sneakers too, it would have been pristine as far as I'm concerned. I don't think anybody would have had a right, except those who are politically oriented, who think that everybody in the world should have a political stance and you're nobody if you don't have it. And, you know, you got to stand for something or you fall for anything and all the other quotes that go with that type of thing. But what changed it was Republicans buy sneakers too, because there was long a suspicion that Michael Jordan's real allegiance was to his bank account and that he didn't want to do anything that was going to mess that up. Now, remember, Michael Jordan was earning, for the most part, a couple million dollars a year to play basketball. It was only in his last couple of years that he made $30 million to play basketball. Other than that, his basketball salary was a pittance. His money came from his endorsements. His money came from his Nike deal. I remember reading, I don't know what year it was, but I remember reading one year that he had earned $39 million or something, two of which was his salary, and all the rest came from essentially Nike. So he looked at that as that was his God, that was his boss, that was who he answered to. You witness the Olympic thing with Reebok. If I'm going to choose between the NBA or Nike, Nike's paying my salary. And Nike's making me the rich man that I am. And so that's, Mike and Bob, where I think people had their differences with him. It wasn't over the Senate race. It was, you don't want to say anything about anything because you want to make sure that you are right down the middle with everybody so that you can continue to sell sneakers. And we've heard that about other athletes too, haven't we?
As far as the line itself is concerned, I was on a podcast last week with Sam Smith himself, and you know, the author of the Jordan Rules, and a primary the primary media person in Chicago at the time covering the team. And Sam is very adamant that it was Michael being Michael in the realm of he always needed the last word, and it was absolutely a throwaway line. Typical of Michael Jordan to get the last word on the topic, never dreaming the implications that we have just discussed.
And here's the thing, and this runs right into what we're talking about, Mitch and Bob. Okay, I believe that in a flinty, hard ass way, Michael always was who he was. Michael knew exactly who he was. He knew what he wanted. He said last night, "Here's what I owed you, my best." Okay, I don't think he was ever going to feel comfortable with that. And we can have a whole discussion right now about whether it was his responsibility to do more with the platform he did. But I always said this about Michael. And I used to kind of, people wanted Derek Jeter to say more. I'm not saying Derek Jeter was Michael or anything like that. Okay, but they both lived out pretty great American lives and did everything they could with their talent, their intelligence, their will, their character, all of that stuff. So the question I'm asking you guys is, was he obligated to do more with that platform?
I have an answer for that in a second, Mike and Bob. I know you do too. First, a word from our good friends at Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You got extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do that you do today. So, Mike, the question that you just asked is really important and is a debate in sports that's larger than Michael Jordan. It is Derek Jeter. It is Tom Brady. It is Mike Trout. It's guys who are at the top of their professions who just want to play ball and are asked to basically speak out on this or speak out on that, and they are frequently held up to a single example, that example being Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
It always goes back to Muhammad Ali. And what people, I don't think, get in this is that Muhammad Ali was the exception and is always going to be the exception, not the rule. He gave up almost 3 years of his career for his stance, arguably what could have been the most lucrative part of his career.
And an unpopular stance, Mitch. That's the thing. The guy who became the most right.
I got no quarrel with the Viet Cong,
right?
And or whatever the direct quote was.
Viet Cong, yeah.
Yeah, and so you. But that was so unusual, and yet he became the biggest and most famous face on the planet. I believe still is in many regards, and everybody who came after him, and that includes the Michael Jordans, because remember, that was the 60s. Before that, it was hard to have an internationally renowned sports figure because of television wasn't as widespread right. as it was. So television came in the 60s, and he became the most famous face on the planet. And then everyone in sports who filled that gap. And since then, it's been a Michael Jordan. It's been a Derek Jeter in the world of baseball. It's been Tiger Woods. It's been Tom Brady. It's been Messi. It's been guys like that. Oh, you find the norm with them is they say nothing. They say nothing about anything. They don't want to, you know, except for themselves or their contracts or things like that. They don't want to tick anybody off. And Michael was being held to that same standard. So I guess I'm bouncing the question back, Mike, to you and Bob, is an athlete obligated, when they reach that level, obligated to do more than just excel in their sport?
Very clearly, there's two issues here. What's expected of a white athlete and what's expected of an athlete of color. In the world, in the societies they inhabit, there is inherent, for the most part, maybe not 100%, but I would say three of us would have to, I think, to agree that going back to the Muhammad Ali era and a little bit earlier, the civil rights era of the 60s, that there's inherent pressure on prominent black athletes to speak out for the cause of the general, and that there was no comparable pressure on any white athlete to speak out for any particular cause of any kind. But the cause of racial injustice, racial inequality, racial anything is incumbent, is pressure on, there's placed on the black athlete that is it just totally absent from that in the white athlete.
I frame this with the word obligated. And Mitch, you're right. It kind of morphs from obligated to expected. And the one thing you always knew about Michael, and the one thing that it's like he's shouting at you throughout this documentary is, you're not going to define me. You're not going to tell me what to do. You're not, if I don't want to wear a Reebok logo on the medal stand, I'll figure out a way not to do it. Okay. And he, Mitch, remember, and Bob, remember it was like an international incident, this thing with this freaking logo.
To anybody listening that thinks we are exaggerating the scope of the story, Mike, I'm glad you said that. It dominated the conversation of American press, leading up to that medal ceremony it was huge.
Yeah, during Olympics where there was still competition going on. It was towards the end of the competition because basketball finishes up.
The gold medal basketball.
And remember, other than that, what was the big thing? It was Barkley elbowing an Angolan player. Remember that? Became an international.
That was early.
Orlando Quambra was this gentleman's name.
And then the way Michael, and we will get to that in a minute, but the way Michael and Scotty tortured poor Tony Kukoc the first time they were on the
but
court.
But here's Michael's quote that I think says it all. He said, in what I thought was a little bit self-pity, it's never going to be enough for everybody. I know that. I realize that because everybody has a preconceived idea for what I should do and what I shouldn't do. But then there's this. The way I go about my life is I set examples. If it inspires you, great. I will continue to do that. If it doesn't, then maybe I'm not the person you should be following. And that line, that last line, is a line that I have written for 30 plus years in the world of sports. Stop following them if you're not satisfied with what they're doing. There are many, many better examples of people in terms of their humanity, their charity, their giving, their selflessness than professional athletes. And if you don't like what they're doing and you want them to do something else, just why don't you go admire someone who does that rather than sitting around saying change, 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 change? Because for the most part, these athletes, in order to get to the levels that they have achieved. And it's true of Tiger Woods, Derek Jeter, Michael Jordan, across the board. It's just true. They have to be so myopic from the time that they are little boys. One thing only, sports. And we've seen it, this documentary is a testament to that. Then all of a sudden they're 25, 28 years old, and it's like, take a stance on politics, take a stance on racism, take a stance on this. And they've basically been just looking at a ball or a bat or a football or a tackle or whatever the case is for their entire lives. And then it's like, look up from that and take a stance. And frequently it happens when they're in their 20s or 30s, and it just isn't right because you're asking them to be something that they've never been. Now, what we also see sometimes is by the time they're in their 50s and they're retired from the sport, then sometimes they do kind of move more into the spotlight. There are exceptions. Jim Brown, you know, certainly, and Muhammad Ali and other. But Bill for Russell. The most part, Bill Russell. But don't you find that it's true? And Bob, your point is very well taken. There's a different set of expectations for black athletes and white athletes. I mean, I do think that Tom Brady and Derek Jeter and other guys have been say something about something, come down on something. And there are issues periodically that come up in presidential races and things like that. But for the most part, you're not hoisted onto the stage and immediately expected to have a stance on an issue the way black athletes are about racism or race. And LeBron James is handling it a different way, too. But I agree with Michael Jordan 100%. You don't like it, go follow somebody else. And that's the thing that sports people just won't do. They won't break away. So they just keep sitting there going, change, 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 change. And it's like banging your head against it.
And you know what? Here's the thing. I wrote a Sunday column about Michael and LeBron yesterday. And LeBron wants you to like him and love him. And he has done good works. He has started schools. He has paid it forward. Okay? That is true. Michael never cared. And I want to ask you guys a question. Before I do, I want to remind everybody that we're sponsored by Harry's. One of the best things about recording a podcast is you don't need to worry about your hair. Having a bad hair day, which I think many of us are these days, just throw a baseball cap on and you're good to go. But what about your facial hair? Even with all that's going on in the world today, I like to keep a clean shave. I know my wife enjoys that too. And with Harry's, I know that's exactly what I'll get each time. A smooth, clean shave that leaves my face looking fresh. I'm always amazed by how quick I can accomplish a shave with Harry's razors. It's one pass and done. No going back over areas again and again. And the thing that I love the most about Harry's is how convenient it is. High quality, durable blades delivered right to my doorstep. And for as little as, listen to this, $2 a blade. You can't go wrong. So save money, stay home by having Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep by going to harrys.com/reporters and see what they got. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the United States so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/reporters. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. I'm telling you, these people are the real deal. Go to harrys.com/reporters to start shaving better today. There was this notion, and I believe that it's true, that all of the stuff that happened because of the gambling, the trip to Atlantic City, and again, I'm not quoting myself for anything, but when I wrote that column telling people to lay off Michael Jordan, mentioned about this was I happened to find it the other day. Somebody asked me to find it. There's a last line of that column. One of these days, he will get tired of all this and walk away, and it will feel like he took the whole sport with him, okay? And it wasn't too long after this that he walked away, and he went to play minor league baseball. And the more you see this, and the more you hear Michael's own words, remember, the urban legend was that Stern was going to suspend him for gambling, and this was Michael's way out. You know who I think suspended Michael? Michael did. And a lot of what I saw last night makes me believe that Michael did need, he knew the cameras were going to follow him to Double-A baseball, where he played for Terry Francona. But I believe that this was self-imposed exile at the time from the whole business of being Michael Jordan basketball icon.
Can't refute it. And he had this fortunate out with the baseball, to try to inject himself into.
And I think he thought he could do it, by the way.
Well, no, I don't
him, oh, right? He didn't go to fail.
And it was the ultimate gamble for a gambler, to bet on himself. But, you know, when you see those images of how many people were waiting for him, I forget who it was. I think it was a PR guy who kind of narrated a little passage of, okay, here was what it was like. You know, he'd get off the, go from the hotel, mob of people in the hotel, get on the bus, mob of people waiting for him on the bus, go through the tunnel, mob of people in the tunnel, go through the pregame, then the game, then after the game, you know, people hanging around the locker room, then the media scrum, then the people who just wanted to hang out afterwards. Then back to the hotel, and then they shot cut to the, you know, Jordan lying on that hot hotel room couch with his cigar, saying, "This is my sanctuary, a room, you know, like I'm stuck inside this room." And that, you know, those images really stay with you.
Did you ever read Hang Time by Bob Green, Mitch? Did you?
Yeah,
because it was a pretty good insight into what Michael's life was like, and you know.
And it's very much like a rock star, you know, it essentially is. The people know where you are at all times. They know where you're hanging out. A golf course was probably a refuge for him as well, because it's one of the few places where mobs are not allowed and people can't gather. And so he could be left alone. But I agree with you, Mike. It was sort of bubbling to a boil and he needed to get out. And now if he had just quit sports altogether, I think he would have driven himself crazy by the second day he was out, because he just needs that competition. But here he could go to baseball, and I imagine that'll be next week's episode. They've got to deal with that at some point.
Get to it.
And here he could escape and
competitive. I can't wait. Bob, one time, since I started covering tennis as a kid, I've known Jimmy Connors. We're very friendly to this day. And he was coaching Andy Roddick at one point. This speaks to Michael's competition, Jones, okay? He was coaching Andy Roddick, and I'm sitting with him watching Roddick play a match at the U.S. Open Tennis. And I turned to Jimmy, and I said, being a coach, does that in any way fill? And that's as far, that is as far as I got. And he turned to me, and he said, don't even effing think about it. Meaning nothing could fill that competitive void in his life. Not being a coach, not anything except being in the arena. And maybe the truest thing I heard last night was Michael basically saying, I'm not a gambling addict, I'm a competition addict.
Yeah, that was really good. Really, really good. No, I don't have
one other. One other thing I wanted to ask you guys about in that the Isaiah Thomas hate fest continued for another week, and he addressed the whole thing about the Olympics, and that when he was asked to play for the Olympic team, his first thing was, "Who's all playing?" And the quote that was with Rod Thorne, who had asked him, he was the selection committee guy. And Michael says, he said, what's that mean? I said, who's all playing? He says, well, the guy you're talking about and you're thinking about is not going to be playing. And then Jordan says, you know, I didn't actually mention his name. Well, he was talking about Isaiah Thomas. He did not want to play with Isaiah Thomas. Now, Isaiah Thomas has played the victim of that encounter. And he was there again, saying, you know, I had the qualifications and I should have been. I was told, because Chuck Daly was the coach, that the last cut for the Olympic team was Joe Dumars and not Isaiah Thomas. That they had dismissed Isaiah Thomas being on it a couple cuts earlier. And nobody talks about that because it didn't become a public fact. But Joe Dumars was, you know, a pretty damn good player and was a defensive player. You know, and when they were trying to round things out, they actually thought, and also with the chemistry, because Joe was beloved and everybody got along with them, that he would have been a good fit. And he was actually the if there were 15 guys, there was 16. If he was six, it would have been 16 to 15. But everybody says it was Isaiah got the, you know, he got the shaft on the thing. Now, it was clear that they didn't want to play with him, and it wasn't just Michael Jordan didn't want to play with him. But Bob, don't you, I think some of that goes back to, now here's your basketball knowledge, goes back to not just the bad boys, but didn't Isaiah and a couple of other guys in an all-star game, Michael Jordan's
they
first
pass
all-star
him the
game,
ball.
Try to freeze him out?
Yes.
And he never forgot that.
That's a celebrated incident, and it would have been interesting to have it explored. The answer is yes. It starts there. It starts there, and with Michael v. Isaiah, absolutely, positively, and I will say this: I've not for the first time since we've had the Jordan the Last Dance going on. Any subject of anything about the Dream Team you want to learn, go to Jack McCollum's book, Dream Team. And it's quite clear in that book Michael absolutely didn't, you know, he was clearly did not want him and wasn't alone.
Hey, and Bob, remember something about the Dream Team, okay? I haven't heard, Mitch, I haven't heard Shaq whining for 30 years that he didn't make it and Christian Laettner did, okay? Yeah. That's one thing. And Mitch, remember at the time, there was a lot of thought that if they were going to add one more guard, it might be Bobby Hurley, that they might put two college players on the team. And so the victimization of Isaiah, which you know we all know about, okay, I'm really tired of it. I he needs to stop talking about this, okay?
Well,
as Bobby Knight's wife once said, the horse died. You know,
you
the horse
back,
died.
Mike, I go back to something one of you guys said earlier. You know, they are just Mike. Oh, yeah. Well, about Michael. They are who they are. This is Isaiah. This is the Isaiah that we're seeing now is an Isaiah, you know, we've all encountered. Mitch, more, you know, closer than anybody. But I've had my Isaiah moments as well and Isaiah encounters. And plus, I covered him from the beginning. And Mike, you too. You know, Mike, Isaiah is Isaiah. He is not going to, he's never going to change either. By the way, technically speaking, they didn't need Isaiah Thomas. They had Magic Johnson, as old as he was, and they had John Stockton. What people didn't know was that John Stockton was going to get hurt in the first game against Cuba in Portland and would never play.
So they
basically had an 11-man team. They could have, at that point, could they have summoned Isaiah Thomas? Oh boy, I don't think, you know, they then got into a situation during the Olympics themselves when Magic was hurt. And with no Stockton, Scotty became the de facto point guard. And Larry, of course, limped around through the whole thing.
They still beat, right, Mitch is right, and they still beat everybody by 30. Yeah. And by the way, I was just thinking of this yesterday. Bob, was it Lafayette Threat or Threat? How is his last name pronounced? When we were talking about Michael looking for dragons to slay, the old player, Lafayette Threat or Threat?
Threat.
Okay. Michael tattooed him one time for like 50 points, okay? And they said, wow, you were on a mission tonight. And he said, well, that guy trash-talked me the last time we played. And a couple of weeks later, somebody said, wait a minute, that kid trash-talked you? And Michael said, nah, I made it up. So not only did he have dragons to slay, he would create imaginary dragons. And I want to tell you guys this, one of the greatest pieces of trash talk I ever heard. Ahmad told me that Michael on the court one time said to John Starks, once a CBA, remember, once always a CBA.
That's cold.
Oh, yeah. No,
that,
no.
That's cold. That is
yeah, well, there
cold.
Was some,
but, you know,
I mean,
it's not unique to Michael
Jordan.
The cameras
picked up some pretty good trash talk on the Olympic team practice there. We just bought Chicago Stadium all the way in here. That's all, you know. Never gets a foul call. I mean,
yeah.
In a practice. But that's what makes players the players that they are, that even a practice, it becomes the most competitive thing. And I think, you know, you're witnessing for better or for worse, and they're not – look – any 10-part documentary about Michael Jordan is going to, and in order to get his cooperation with it, is going to lean towards idolizing him and making him the hero. But as much as within that framework as you could expect, you're getting to see his warts too. The thing is he doesn't consider them warts. Like when you see him trash talking guys or ruining guys or crushing guys, he likes that. Like you said, Mike, he doesn't care if you like him or not. And the level of participation that he has given on this is in direct opposite proportion to how candid he was during his actual career. And it's the reason that people like us are sort of marveling at this. It's like, wow, he's answering every single question totally honestly and cursing and being very blunt, and he didn't do any of that when he was a player. And so this is what you get when a guy 20 years later decides, okay, I can now sanction the film that you taped of me, and it becomes fascinating to us. I don't know how fascinating it is to younger people. It'd be interesting to see, like, what the numbers on this are.
It's like a tutorial. Mitch, you're right. It's like a tutorial. You know, it really is like taking a history. This is like Michael Jordan 101 for teenagers, you know, 20 somethings. And you know, Mitch and Bob, we always talk about this, how fast the walkway moves. Okay. Michael Jordan was old news. Okay. The late Kobe Bryant is not old news now because of the tragedy, on the helicopter. LeBron doesn't believe that someday there's going to be somebody else everybody's talking about. And we get that. We get all of this, you know, the curtain has been pulled back on Michael Jordan. Guys, tell me something. Forget about the OJ documentary, okay? When was the last time you can see, saw a documentary quite like this about someone in the first class cabin of sports legends that is this unfiltered?
I have no way. I have absolutely no recollection of anything quite like it.
Well, nobody's going to
OJ's a completely different story.
Nobody's going to attempt a thing this big except for a guy who's sitting in row one of the first class cabin.
By the way, wasn't it eerie? I wrote down a note to myself, eerie seeing and hearing Kobe say, yeah. And I quote, "I don't get five championships here without him. He guided me so much," unquote.
Oh, man, I know. By the way, how close
to his death they actually filmed that, because as you pointed out, Mike, they're kind of scrambling and putting this stuff together. Who knows when they got him? He certainly looked like, you know, was in the past year.
I think they filmed him.
And believe me, there are people right now who are clamoring to, you know, let's get the Kobe version of this. I'm sure LeBron is already talking to his own production team about, okay, when mine comes out, it's going to be 12 parts, all right? Because I'm not going to stop at 10. I got to outdo this.
It won't be the same, though, because of the world in which LeBron has existed, okay? The modern world, okay? Oh, by the way, I was wondering about this the other day, and according to Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, I know you guys have wanted to hear this, apparently it's tequila in that glass.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, Sincora tequila. I don't know anything about tequila.
Speaking of LeBron and documentaries, realized that there was a documentary done when he was in high school.
Right.
And it was a wonderful movie that tells us a lot about who LeBron really is.
Well, that'll just be part
all on
of
the plus
footage.
Side. It's called More Than a Game, and it's really compelling.
That'll just be part of the footage of his 12-part version whenever he gets that.
Oh, yeah,
done.
But I'm just saying, it's interesting that they put the camera on him in high school. He was 15 years old, 16 years old.
And you're right, Mike. It's different because we've seen all the footage on him.
Yes,
you know,
there's
not a whole
right?
lot left that
right.
we haven't already seen. Everything's been filmed, and a lot of it by himself. Before we take one final shift and a look at the world of baseball, a last word from our friends at Geico.
Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm out of time.
Okay, baseball continues to talk as if there's going to be a season despite the coronavirus. I think it is today, or I don't know what the time zone is, but right around today, that South Korea is officially starting its major professional baseball league. They've had warm-up games, or what their version of spring training, but they're actually starting it without fans. Now, South Korea is not America. The numbers of and the travel and all the rest of that, the issues of crossing borders, it's not an issue there. But it is instructive that they have done this without fans. You can see the images on the internet now. A lot of players are wearing masks. There's a handful of media that sit up in the stands and watch it, separated by, you know, 6-foot thing. They have certain interesting rules, like there's no spitting involved. You know, it's a fine now if you spit. The umpires have to wear masks behind, things like that. But what I found the most instructive of what I've read about this is if a player, and they all get tested, but if a player tests positive at any point in the season, the league will be suspended for a minimum of 3 weeks. 3 weeks. Now, all the other things that I just said, I could see Major League Baseball adopting. Can you see them adopting a plan like that?
No. Can you? I don't think so.
No, I can't.
They will not take this that far and announce that Rudy Gobert tests positive. We're going to shut the whole thing down. They must have a whole coronavirus bureaucracy being built as we speak with rules, regulations, fallback positions. But one positive test, Bob, do you think so? I don't think it's going to shut it down.
No. Wait a minute. You're saying that you don't think that they wouldn't have to shut it down if they had a positive test?
I don't think one positive test would shut it down. I don't think they would go to these lengths to try to get this thing back up and running and have a single positive, test or antibody test.
I don't know either,
but I don't think so.
There's another aspect of resumption that has intrigued me. It came up again yesterday, which is that Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada has reiterated about the... Remember, we have two countries involved here in three of our four primary sports, and anybody who is coming in would have to be quarantined or something. I mean, we're going to have to deal with that if they're going to reopen sports involving this. I have a suggestion, Bob,
in the case of baseball, nobody's going to Toronto to play a baseball game.
All right, I have a serious suggestion for them in that regard, and that is all they got to do for Toronto is relocate to Buffalo. They're going to have no fans anyway. Right? It's about no fans. We're talking about opening with no fans. That's a great idea, Bob. They got to relocate to Buffalo. It's that simple.
Take it one step further. Why go to Buffalo? They're going to relocate. Locate down where they're going to have to cluster teams together. This is not going to work.
Because it's a sense of geographic unity there. There's a sense of territorial
interest. What for? There's no fans. They don't care. There's nobody coming.
It's a gesture. I recommend it.
I don't think you need a gesture. If you live in Buffalo, does it give you some kind of great sense of pride that there's a game going on 10 miles from you that you're not allowed to go to? What difference does it make?
If I were a Buffalonian and that were the case and they gave me a team that I could watch, I'd embrace it. Yeah.
But you're going to watch them on television. You're going to watch them on television. The only place you're going to see this sport is television.
But they're now ours. All right, fine. That's my suggestion. Take it or leave it.
Bob, I'm just reading between the lines here with Mitch. I don't think he really embraced that notion the way you were hoping.
I got the feeling
we
need a little more, fleshing out the story here.
But there aren't a lot of Canadian players in Major League Baseball, and the issue of where you play is more your nationality than anything else and where you're hunkering down. Now, what is a more interesting thing is how many Dominican players are in the Dominican Republic right now.
Right.
Because... Yeah. If they're in the Dominican Republic, where it is rampant, as it is in other countries, what do you do about getting them all back in here? Everybody's got to be quarantined. You are not going to be able to make some kind of exception for right now. Nobody can fly in from any other country, essentially. Are you going to suddenly say, oh, we're going to make 700? Well, it won't be 700 because a lot of Americans. We're going to make 200-300 person exception because they're baseball players and allow them to come into the country. If at the very least, if you're going to try to pull that off, you're going to have to sit in a quarantine that's very public and everybody's going to be aware of for at least 14 days. And then once they're there, they are all going to have to be in one or two places. I see no way that baseball can pull this off if thinking that we'll have teams in New York and Los Angeles and they'll somehow play each other and fly from cities. So you've got to eliminate airplanes. And you've got to eliminate long distances for these teams to go to and essentially create a bubble of some kind. And that's why the most sensible plans to me are the Arizona and Florida ones. South Korea can do this because how big is South Korea, landmass-wise?
Right.
They don't have to go from New York to Los Angeles.
And Taiwan makes two. They're playing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how big is I've been to both these places. I don't recall, I don't have at the top of my head what their geographic size is, but I've been to them both and I don't remember
Taiwan,
feeling
I saw
like,
just,
wow, am I in a vast, huge country here?
Taiwan, I saw 2 days ago, is the size of Connecticut and New Jersey combined.
Okay. There you go.
I think Mr. Album is going to believe there's a baseball season when somebody says play ball.
Yeah. That's well, I think, the big test is going to be in a couple of weeks when the numbers come back on the states that have opened up. And if the states that have opened up, like the Georgias and the Texas, are suddenly seeing these huge spikes, I think baseball, basketball, even football can start to forget it. You know, I hope that's not the case. And I hope that we see positive things. That, hey, it's not as bad as people thought. Georgia's still, cases are going down and people are self-isolating and Texas isn't shooting up. But if you see some kind of surge, then it's basically, it's like the groundhog in the extra 6 weeks. You know, you got to go back in the hole. And I think for sure baseball and basketball and hockey, all the ones that are, you know, should be playing right now, have to give it up and just talk about next year. But, you know, we'll find out in a couple of weeks.
On that cheery note.
I think that wraps it up. Sorry.
Take us out, Mitch. Take us out.
But we did have a lot of Michael Jordan talk, so that's good. We do this every Monday and Thursday on the Sports Reporters Podcast. You can catch it on Apple and Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, any of the popular platforms. Leave us a comment if you like what you heard or didn't like what you heard, and give us a rating if you're so inclined. We always appreciate that. We will see you on Thursday. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great week.